SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's me, Joey P, Joe Pizzapia, and welcome to Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid, the home of the winning edge. And no, I am not Craig Mish. Craig Mish is on assignment. That's right, on assignment. I'm not sure what that means, but that's where he is. Not designated for assignment, so don't get worried. Craig Mish will be back tomorrow. He's at spring training. They finally let him out of the cage, so he is out there looking at the batting cages instead and actually going to see some baseball. And he may or may not join us later in the show, but that's okay because we've got a great 2 hours of fantasy content for you. We got some NBA, some NFL, some Major League Baseball, and a whole lot in between. And it's long overdue that I get to spend some quality time with my boy Davis Maddock. Davis, where you been, my friend? It's so good to see your face, and I love the specs, man. They are really good. I am jealous of those.
Well, you know, they're not real specs, my friend. They are here to protect my tender little baby eyes from getting burnt out from staring at my computer all day long. This is the new movement. When it was clear that we were not going to be leaving our houses due to the ongoing, you know, global pandemic outside, one of the first things I invested in was these blue light blocking glasses. And I would honestly recommend them for everyone out there, you know, working from home. And it doesn't really matter, you know, if you're staring at your iPad or your computer or your TV or whatever. They are absolutely massive for protecting your eyes. I bet that's not how people thought we were going to start the show, but we're starting the show with blue blocking glasses.
Well, let me tell you, I've thought about getting them because lately, I mean, no one stares at screens more than you and me, I feel like, between all the shows we do and all the stuff we're doing research-wise. My daughter has them for homeschool because she was getting headaches and stuff like that, you know, the virtual schooling. And I kind of started to think maybe I should get a pair. And now that I see you in them and all their glory, I think I might have to do it. I don't know which frames, though. That'll be the thing. Who knows? Maybe next time you see me, that will be. But let's get to some headlines besides Davis's glasses. And we'll start here with the Blazers, who beat the Hornets last night, and some big deals there, obviously. We've got J.J. Watt signing a 2-year deal with the Cardinals. This kind of came out of nowhere, basically, yesterday, which is kind of fascinating. And Davis and I are going to break that down for you in a second. But there was a lot of rumors that Watt would end up maybe in Buffalo, maybe, who knows, Kansas City, all these places where, you know, Green Bay maybe going home again, but he did not. Turns out it's the Cardinals, after all. The Atlanta Hawks fired Lloyd Pierce after 2+ seasons. Nate McMillan, former Supersonic, if memory serves, named interim coach. And the NIT tournament will be a 16-team field, and that will take place in Dallas, Texas this year. Now, normally that's in New York City, the NIT, which is, you know, kind of the little brother to the NCAA tournament. So it's going to be nice to have college basketball back, even though it's going to be somewhere else, not in the New York area. It's just nice that we're getting the tournaments this year, because we know from a wagering perspective, that's huge here on the network and huge for all of you who watch Sports Grid. But Davis, I want to start with J.J. Watt and some football stuff today, because, you know, it was all about, well, it's J.J. wants to go and win somewhere. He wants to win somewhere. And I think the Cardinals are a very good team. I was very enthusiastic about them coming into this 2020 season. But was this really just a matter of who was going to give him a longer commitment and a better deal than winning? Because it seems like that's kind of where it shook out.
Well, look, I mean, we always knew he wasn't going to take, you know, a veteran's minimum deal. This isn't like a 37-year-old signing on to the Miami Heat for a veteran minimums deal to go win a championship with LeBron James. That's just not really the way the NFL works for these superstar players. They still want to get their paychecks. J.J. Watt definitely got a pretty decent size paycheck from the Arizona Cardinals, and he kind of got the best of both worlds, because I'm pretty optimistic about the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're pretty strong. I think they're pretty solid. And, I think J.J. Watt got paid, and I think that with some slightly more optimal coaching decisions from the Arizona Cardinals, I think they can be competitive in that division and in the NFC in 2021.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because I feel like last year was not a good year for Cliff Kingsbury. Even though the record improved, there was a lot of, I think, bad play calling, bad decision making at times. This is also a team that started off like gangbusters, and they had a lot of things breaking their way. And then it's funny because the high point was the Hail Mary game, which was actually on the other night. They were repeating it on NFL Network. And I was watching it again, and I was thinking to myself, you know, it's funny. This seemed like it was going to be the apex and the beginning of the Kyler Murray for MVP narrative building and all this stuff. And it turned out to be the opposite. It turned out to be the peak, and it was all downhill, basically. Now, granted, I think a week later, you know, somebody sat on Kyler Murray, and he hurt his shoulder, and he wasn't quite the same for a few weeks. But overall, what happened to the Cardinals, in your opinion, in that second half?
You know, I think it was a combination of the offense becoming pretty stagnant. I think that DeAndre Hopkins was injured playing through an ankle injury. I think that Kyler was playing through that shoulder injury. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury was just not really creative and inventive enough to fix things, to make things work better for the Arizona Cardinals. And I think you got to view that as basically the Cardinals' number one problem going forward. And I mean, Kyler is a little turnover prone, quick to throw the ball away. Things that are, you know, not particularly great. But I think that, you know, there are more tools in the toolbox to come for the Arizona Cardinals, essentially.
And do you think J.J. Watt is a significant enough addition here where it changes your opinion about where the Cardinals are in the West? Or are they still kind of teetering in that number three spot?
I don't think he moves the needle, but I think that just continually betting on Kyler to improve is what moves the needle. Mm. So I think they can be better than third in that division, but I don't know if Watt is the one that gets them over the hump.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Look, it's certainly surprising, and we wish J.J. Watt well. And look, I mean, who wouldn't want to hang out in Arizona? Weather's pretty good there most of the year, especially in the fall when he's going to be playing football. So that's a plus as well. We're going to hit a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about NBA with our good pal Brett Levy. The night that was, some great performances. Who was the best of the best? Well, you'll find out. So don't go anywhere. We're just getting started right here on Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be right back right after this, right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Sports Today. Coming up a little later in the program, in the first hour, we're going to do a little fantasy baseball discussion. We're also going to talk about my New York Mets. That's right. Oh, my goodness. That should be a treat. But first, it's time for the night that was an NBA, and it was a lot of action out there. So let's talk about the fantasy standouts with our boy Brett Levy and take a look at all of those big-time guys from last night. And you'll see Nikola Jokic, 39 points, 14 rebounds, 9 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks for him last night. James Harden in overtime leads the Nets to victory over the Spurs, 30 points, 14 rebounds, 15 assists, and 2 steals, triple-double for Harden. Luka with 33 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists. Nikola Vucevic, which I said wrong, even though I practiced beforehand, 29 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists. And Colin Sexton, 39 points, 3 rebounds, 8 assists, and 2 steals. And Brett, as we bring you in here, our producer extraordinaire, to kind of break down the night that was, you know, I caught the Brooklyn game in the overtime, a wacky finish to that regular fourth quarter there, that regular time. And then, you know, in overtime, it just kind of hardened and the rest just kind of took over. And I'm starting to make this equation. It's starting to feel a little bit like watching Tampa in football this year, where you're watching a team just kind of go through the regular season trying to figure out its identity with all these stars and all these moving pieces. Is it kind of the same thing? Is this just basically the regular season, one big tune-up for them to hopefully get to a final? And do you think that things are going the right way right now, in the right direction for this Brooklyn Nets team?
Yeah, I think you're on to a lot there. I think it is a little bit of a tune-up. I think right now they're performing unbelievably with just Kyrie and James Harden out there. And there'll probably be a little bit of an adjustment period again when Kevin Durant comes back in. They may not lose, but they may not, you know, win or look as good winning, right? It may be a little sloppier. They might have quarters where they're not playing as well, where guys are standing around, and it's just, it's flowing really well right now, and they're all playing really well. They all fit in their roles. Shots are going to be adjusted when Kevin Durant comes back. He's going to get a lot of shots and opportunities. He's probably going to adjust where guys are playing. Like, you know, if a guy's at a three, well, Kevin Durant's going to play the three, so he'll play the four or the two. And, you know, people will have to adjust a little bit. But I think Brooklyn's the team to beat in the East for sure. And that was actually a really big win for the Nets franchise. That was their first win in San Antonio since Jason Kidd was playing point guard for the Nets. And, you know, that's a long time ago, Joe. Almost 20 years, 18 years since the last time the Nets won in San Antonio. So that's a big win for a franchise that has not won in San Antonio for a long time.
Davis, are you there?
Yeah, I didn't know Brett was throwing it to me. So I'm totally with Brett. I'm completely with Brett here on the Nets. I've been saying it on the show for the last 2 weeks. I think with the way the East is set up right now, I mean, you got to just feel terrified if you're the Bucks or if you're the Raptors or if you're the Heat, you know, or if you're even the Celtics. I mean, just look at how well they are playing with Bruce Brown taking Kevin Durant shots, with Timothy Luau Cabarrot taking Kevin Durant shots, playing DeAndre Jordan 32 minutes a night at center. Because when it comes to the playoffs, Kevin Durant's going to start at center. Joe Harris and Bruce Brown are going to be the wings. Then Kyrie Irving and James Harden are going to be the guards. And that lineup features five guys who over a series could conceivably shoot over 40% from three. I mean, I think that in some of these playoff games, the Nets are going to be putting up 140 points. I think they're going to rain threes down. And I think, by the way, the Lakers need to be scared too in a potential finals matchup, because the Lakers always play a true center, whether that's Trez, whether that's Anthony Davis, or whether that's Marc Gasol. But pretty much, you know, 44 minutes of the 48 minutes, they're going to be playing a true center. And, you know, sometimes it's Markieff. And then Anthony Davis has a little bit of range. But Anthony Davis is not at his, you know, most comfortable spot defending Kevin Durant out on the perimeter, you know, going to 23 feet against Durant. Like, I'm just terrified watching the Nets play basketball right now. They're so good.
I think the rest of their league is terrified also. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm surprised actually how well they've played this year without Durant on the court. And the record speaks for itself. Let's get to the other standouts here from last night. LaMelo Ball, 30 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, 4 steals and a block for him. Carmelo Anthony, 29 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 steals and 2 blocks. Rudy Gobert, 22 points of his own with 9 rebounds last night, 1 assist, 1 steal, 5 blocks. Bogdanovich had 31 points in that game last night, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, and 3 steals. And Lonzo Ball, 23 points of his own, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, and 2 blocks. Nice to see the Ball brothers making the list together. But I want to talk about last night's game between the Pelicans and the Jazz, because the Jazz have looked great, obviously, all year. We've talked about them many times on the show. They're my favorite team to watch right now because they play old school kind of basketball, which is like a forgotten art form. But last night was a loss for them with the Pelicans. And Zion was just a physical presence on the court last night. He really seems like he's starting to come into his own and realize some of that potential that we all saw last year and in little pieces, and we certainly saw in college. Is Zion right now the most physical player in the NBA, in your opinion, Brett? Is there somebody more physical than him?
I mean, Zion's really unique, Joe. He is a physical freak. Like, I mean, he's probably 6'7", and, you know, we're expecting him to be this guy who's going to be dunking on everyone and leading the league in blocks, and he plays above the rim. So he's really unique player, and it'll be interesting to watch his development for sure. I thought the Pelicans looked really good last night. That was a big win beating Utah, but you know, he's got to play with a true big man like Steven Adams. Steven Adams is a really good big man for him to play with. He clogs the lane a little bit too much, maybe, for Zion, but a guy that's going to be physical and rebounding is going to help Zion. It's going to allow him to create in space, allow him to play with the ball a little bit and be a facilitator, and kind of allow him to cut and, you know, play with another big who will set screens so he can backdoor cut and go for these lobs at the rim. So I think the Pelicans are on the right track with Zion. They're using him really well. Ingram's a superstar, and they have a big that, doesn't really care about touches and kind of likes helping create for others, which is good. But Davis, Utah's been a really hot team, and last night was a tough one for them.
It was a tough one for them last night. I don't think I'm worried about Utah long term because of the style of basketball that they play. And I'm also not going to fault a team for losing to the Pelicans right now. I mean, not only is Zion playing really well, but we gotta give credit where it's due. Lonzo Ball looks like a brand new player playing in this role with the Pelicans, right? With the way that Zion is playing, with the strong center play that they're getting. I mean, Brandon Ingram, I mean, possibly no player who is playing as well as Brandon Ingram is playing right now, is getting the acclaim. Bogdanovich is playing really solid. There's just a lot going for the Pelicans right now. And I mean, there's a lot going for the Jazz too. I would say one thing I am slightly worried about as it pertains to the Jazz is that their style of basketball works really well in the regular season,
Yeah,
but it does
that's a good
not work
point.
as strongly in the postseason, right? Because Rudy Gobert, he gets played off the court against these teams that can play without a center. Against the Clippers, Rudy Gobert is going to get played off the court. He might get played off the court against Anthony Davis. Like it's just kind of the way that it works, And so that's my one concern for the Jazz.
All right, let's switch gears from one ball to the other ball here. Is LaMelo Ball cemented himself in your mind as Rookie of the Year already?
Rookie of the Year, invest in LaMelo Ball however you can. Sports cards, dynasty leagues. I mean, however you can get in on LaMelo Ball's future. Like I am so impressed with this kid. I think he is going to be just a generational talent at guard for the next 10 years in the NBA if he doesn't get hurt. He is so good.
And speaking of sports cards, it's Tuesday, which means Josh Cohen's going to join us in hour two to talk some sports cards. So maybe he'll have a little LaMelo Ball stuff. I don't know. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the New York Mets, who had a strong offseason and some discipline, which is something that organization has lacked quite a bit. They did not spend like drunken sailors, but they did make a few key moves. And I think right now they're positioned very well in that National League East. So we're going to break them down for you when we come back. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right here on Sports Grid. Right after this on Fantasy Sports Today.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Start spreading the news because the Mets are back in New York. Well, at least we hope they are. Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Sports Today, right here on Sports Grid. And we're going to talk a little bit about the New York Mets and their future prospects for 2021. They made a huge offseason move to acquire not only Francisco Lindor, but also Cookie, aka Carlos Carrasco, into that rotation. They have a two-time Cy Young Award winner in Jacob deGrom. They have a guy who hit 50 home runs as a rookie. The Mets have a lot of talent. And let's start with the lineup and take a look at him. Right now, it looks like Brandon Nimmo and his 400 on base is going to be leading off for this team, which I like. Now, you could have McNeil in the two-hole. You could have Francisco Lindor. We're still waiting to see what kind of spring lineups they throw out there. Then you've got Michael Conforto, very solid season of his own. Pete Alonso coming off a down year in batting average, still had a lot of home runs. I think he was a, it was just a strange year for a lot of people, except for Dominic Smith. He's coming off a fantastic year where he hit 316. Dominic Smith really is coming to his own as an offensive player. Still, I think a little bit lacking in the power department, just a tad, but that's okay because he makes up for it with the great contact skills. And of course, Dominic Smith, not the greatest defender. So it would have been nice for the Mets if they had a DH spot. And then JD Davis at third, James McCann at catcher. and of course the pitcher in the nine spot. And Davis, when we look at this lineup, to me, the problem with the Mets in the past has always been they've been a very station-to-station team. They haven't been super athletic. Now you have Brandon Nimmo at the top, an athletic guy, high on base guy. Francisco Lindor, a guy who's got 30, 20 seasons galore. Now I feel like this Mets offense is in a better situation to create runs than they have in the past. And to me, that is a huge difference maker. And we kind of talked about, you know, the Utah Jazz and the NBA and how, well, they're a better regular season team. See, I think creating runs is so important in the postseason of Major League Baseball. If you get there, the ability to create runs, because typically those games are very tight, oftentimes deciding the bullpen. And the teams that can create their own runs at the top are the difference makers, because sometimes those power bats go dormant and you got to be able to find a way to scratch out a run or two here and there. So when you look at this Mets lineup, what do you see before we get on to the rotation and the bullpen and the rest of it?
I mean, I see a lineup that has loads of options depending on if you're facing a left-handed starting pitcher or a right-handed starting pitcher. They have Nimmo leading off, but obviously you don't, you know, you're probably not going to lead Nimmo off against a left-hander. So you can bring in Albert Almora Jr. You can bring in Jonathan Villar. Obviously, you can, you could even switch things up and you could move, you know, someone like JD Davis, who crushes left-handed pitching. You could move him up from eight against right-handers. You could move him up to the leadoff spot, and then you could sub in Kevin Pillar and make him the eight-hole hitter against left-handed pitching. I see Francisco Lindor, who's a switch hitter. He should just be established there at number three all season long. Conforto is a guy that I think doesn't get his due amongst Major League Baseball fans. He has been an incredible player through his short career. He has a career weighted on base average of 358, weighted runs created plus of 127, isolated slugging of 225. I mean, these are all-star game back-to-back-to-back year numbers from Conforto. And he just is not talked about the same way that, you know, his crosstown rivals Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. No one wants to give him that due. And even when it comes to the Mets, everyone talks about Pete Alonso as being their best player. But if I was constructing a team, I would take Conforto ahead of Pete Alonso in terms of a guy that I would want on my team. You know, Conforto is going to give you good defense. He's going to give you a big surplus of war on the offensive side of the plate. So like, I'm a huge fan of this Mets lineup. And I think the bench additions of Jonathan Villar and Kevin Pillar just give them so much flexibility in terms of what they can do versus lefties.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Conforto too, and I don't think he does get enough credit. I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head there, Davis. I mean, Michael Conforto is very consistent. He has grown into this role. He is underappreciated, maybe doesn't have the same peak power that you saw from Pete Alonso a few years ago, but he has a steadier presence in that lineup, and he's going to be huge for the Mets' success. They've got him looming as a contract extension, possibly Francisco Lindor. We'll see if the Mets can get that done. But Davis, I'm really glad you brought up another point here, which is this Mets team and basically the bench and how they've adjusted there too, because as I said, not an athletic team in years past. Now you bring in Jonathan Villar, incredible speed, also a guy who can play different positions. Malik Smith, Kevin Pillar, really good two-way, strong Major League Baseball player, strong clubhouse guy too. I love the Mets' depth for the first time in a very long time. This is one of the deeper teams in Major League Baseball, and I think we all know that the deeper teams, when you look at the Dodgers, you look at some other teams out there that have had success the last few years, it's because of the depth they've had. And I would venture to say that maybe they don't have, look, we can argue everybody wants to pick different teams in the National League East, but I don't think there's a deeper team roster-wise right now than the New York Mets.
No, and I think what they're doing is incredibly smart. You know, if you look at the rest of the NL East, the Braves are really strong at the top. The Nationals are really strong at the top. But then, you know, you start getting in to the Nationals bench and you're like, man, if someone gets hurt, they're going to have to be playing Gerardo Parra every single day. And for the Mets, it's like, okay, well, we can play Dom Smith. We can play Kevin Pillar. You know, they can play Jonathan Villar. They can do a lot of different things. Also, I mean, the biggest competitive advantage the Mets have is their new ownership, where if someone gets hurt in season, the Mets will just do whatever it takes to get talent on their roster, right? So, like, let you know, we start seeing some other National League teams tank off. Like, let's say the Cubs start playing really poorly, and we know the Cubs are looking to generate money and not necessarily generate wins. Who's to say that Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant might not be a new member of the Mets at the trade deadline, mm-hmm. right, in August. And I know that sounds crazy to speculate on now, but every move the Cubs are doing is about saving money. Every move right. the Mets are making is about generating wins. And they seem like natural trade partners to me. And you don't see interdivision trades all that often. But I do think that adding one, you know, let's say 330 plus weighted on base average bat, I will make it a Davis Maddock guarantee that the Mets add one bat that good in season to the roster. I will guarantee it.
I'll tell you what, I'll take Kyle Hendricks along with that bat if you could. Let's take a look at the rotation for the New York Mets, and obviously Jacob DeGrom at the top of it. But after DeGrom, there were some question marks. Marcus Stroman did not pitch last year at all. Noah Syndergaard coming off Tommy John. So acquiring Cookie Carrasco, a guy who has a very high K per nine over the last few years, he had battled cancer a few years ago. You take that season out. He came back last year, and one of the few guys that I think the short season actually was helpful for was Carlos Carrasco. He had a good, strong, small sample size. Getting back up to speed, another year removed from his treatments. You've got Taijuan Walker coming in now, too. So eventually, Peterson, you would imagine, gets bumped from that rotation if and when Syndergaard can come back healthy. And he is the great unknown, too, because that's the difference maker. How Syndergaard comes back really, I think, is, you know, the bellwether, if you will, in this rotation. So is in your opinion, Syndergaard somebody that the Mets should be counting on or should be preparing for the inevitable disappointment? Because it seems like whenever we're excited about Syndergaard, things don't always go our way.
I mean, I don't know if you should be counting on him, but clearly Noah Syndergaard's peak is Cy Young candidate, you know, but better or similar to, you know, per start performance to Jacob DeGrom in 2016, 2.6 ERA in 183 innings. And then, you know what? We also forget that he was good in 2018 as well, 154 innings mm-hmm. of three-run ERA. And even, let's look at 2019, right, where Mets fans started to become, you know, not encouraged by Syndergaard's results. So in that season, he had a 13% home run to fly ball rate, which meant that his ERA skill indicators were much better than his actual ERA. He was still generating a ton of ground balls. He was still generating strikeouts. He still wasn't walking guys. He just was kind of getting unlucky on fly balls, which we know pitchers don't have that much control over. Once the ball leaves their hand, that's one of the things that they don't really control. So if Syndergaard can even give them 100 innings, and let's say that David Patterson is able to give them 90 innings of 4.2 ERA, and let's say Walker is able to give them 150 innings of 4.3 ERA, you know, if they get those 100 good innings of 3.5 ERA ball from Syndergaard, mm-hmm. that is more than enough for them to win the division, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. We'll get to the win total in a second here. But, I mean, they got Edwin Diaz in the bullpen. They acquired Trevor May in the offseason. They still got Betances there. Lugo's coming off an elbow clearing out. He should be okay, though. Usually, typically, when it's a cleanup surgery, these guys bounce back very quickly, especially the bullpen guys. So I feel like the Mets are loaded, and the number kind of speaks for itself. The number is 90.5 right now when you're talking about the New York Mets. So, Davis, when you're looking at that number, in your opinion, do you think this is an over or an under in the National League East, which is going to be a very competitive division again in 2021?
So I know that I just painted a pretty rosy picture of everything that the Mets have going on. And I know that I guaranteed them bringing in, you know, a good 330 wOBA bat. However, I think you absolutely have to be looking at the under here as a bet. And it's not because of anything the Mets are doing wrong, but this is their division. The Braves, maybe the best team in the National League East. The Marlins, not going to be a total step over because of their right. pitching. I think that they have, I literally think they have five guys who could end up being solid, you know, plus value pitchers. The Nationals, Not a bad baseball team, right? They're not a deep mm-hmm. team, but they have very solid starting pitching. Scherzer, Corbin, Strasburg, and even, you know, Lester is going to give them 150 workhorse innings. They have some studs at the top of their batting order. So it pains me to do it, Joe. I don't think this is a strong bet. Some of these I'm going to feel really strongly about, but I am going to side. I would maybe do a half unit on the under here. But I don't feel great about it because, I do think they are a talented baseball team.
I think 90.5 is a great number. That's why they put them out there. But I'm going to go over, not by a lot, but I'm going to go over here. And I'm going to go over because of the depth. And I think that's going to be the difference. When you look at these other teams, no, the Marlins are not going to be a doormat anymore. That is true. But the Nats have a lot of age, a lot of questions, not as much depth. The second part of the Braves lineup, I still think is suspect. Some pieces of that rotation might be as well. So the Phillies, I don't think have enough, and that bullpen's no good. So we come back, we're going to talk some ADP, some fantasy baseball. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, everybody, it's that time of year. March is here, spring training's upon us, baseball games are going on, and we're all very excited, and that means it's fantasy baseball season. And if you want to get ready for your fantasy baseball season, go to Amazon right now and go get a Fantasy Black Book 2021 on Amazon for paperback or Kindle. You can also save a tree and get it on iTunes if you prefer that way. But this week, when you buy a Black Book, a portion of proceeds go to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. So get a Black Book. Help yourself out. Help somebody else out. Let's do some good here in the world, because we can. Again, go get it over on Amazon, the Fantasy Black Book 2021. And last year, we raised a nice chunk of change for St. Jude's to help out the kids, and I'd like to do that again this year. So go out there. Do something good. It's nice. It's nice to do nice things. I know Davis always does nice things, and we're going to do some nice things for you here, because today we're going to do a little ADP wars back and forth, a little either or. These are two players, same position, that would be going somewhere around the same ADP. And let's start with a battle at third base between Eugenio Suarez, one of my favorite names to say. See, that one I could say. Vucevic, I can't say that at all. Eugenio Suarez, I can say all day long, Matt Davis. I say it's so nice. But Yoan Moncada on the other side. Now, when you look at these two players, you know, clearly the track record of Eugenio Suarez these last couple years was brilliant. Then he had the injury to the shoulder in the pool. I don't know what he was doing in the pool, but it wasn't good. You see the batting average dropped to 202. Power was still there. That was a nice thing, but he had a lot of problems. And again, you know, so many things went strange. So many routines were off for a guy who was trying to get back from an injury. We don't know exactly if we should take any stock out of these numbers. And Yoan Moncada, who's dealing with an injury right now, this is another player where you look at him and you've seen him start to really pop. And then all of a sudden last year, also not so great. So these are two players that are basically you're buying low. Both of them have some sort of injury attached to them. Moncada's, I feel like, is a little bit more pressing. So I'll let you go first here, Davis. In your opinion, if you're going to draft one of these two guys in the same ADP, would you rather have Eugenio Suarez or Yoan Moncada from the White Sox?
This one seems pretty easy to me, and it's going to be Yoan Moncada from the Chicago White Sox. And I think there's a very clear explanation for why he wasn't good last year, and it was he was still dealing with the implications of the coronavirus. He was one of the guys who got it, was symptomatic, and basically said it bothered him all year long. He was sick. He did not have, you know, he wasn't able to get in full training sessions, wasn't able to get, you know, in his usual amount of cardio. But basically, he was playing sick all year long through 231 plate appearances, hit 6 home runs, still had an isolated slugging of 160, still had a weighted on base average of 309, only hit 225. I mean, it is phenomenal, but he was a positive wins above replacement player while basically having the worst year of his career. I think we can very comfortably project him for 25 home runs, 10 steals. We're gonna obviously put him in a good spot in that White Sox batting order. And, you know, that none of that is true for Eugenio Suarez, who plays for a bad team, plays for a team that's going to be selling guys off all year long, who is not going to be interested in winning games. So I think that we're getting a sick no pun intended, discount on Moncada for his.
It's going to be that ADP kind of show today. I love it. Yes, I love it. Not enough dad jokes and puns for me. Everybody knows that. Brett knows that. James knows that. They're probably happy that I left for a while and now I'm back today. So they got a break from all the dad jokes. But, you know, you make a really good argument for Yoan Moncada. I'm a little worried about the throwing arm right now. They're babying him in spring training a little bit because he's had some soreness there. Maybe a little DH, not going to, you know, play the field. I don't like drafting guys that are hurt going into the year. And granted, it seems like a manageable injury, but everything seems manageable. And then all of a sudden we get like 60 games into the season. And we find out, oh, it's really not. He's really not healthy. So if Suarez is healthy this spring and he looks good, I'm going to go with the other end. I'm going to go with Suarez because I've seen the enormous 40 home run potential. And I think Yoan Moncada is probably a better five category player in a lot of ways. However, I think I will take that elite power. It's going to produce RBI. It's going to produce runs. I will take that. I'll suffer the 260 batting average. You can get back up to that range or 250, whatever it might be. I will take that with Suarez. And as long as he's healthy, again, once again, it's all about the health with these guys. But you've heard the argument for Moncada, for Suarez. Now you can make the decision on your own. Let's get to another one here with two outfielders. Now, Victor Robles, people are, you know, down on way too much. Last year going into the season, people were drafting this guy in the fourth round. Now, all of a sudden, he has dropped considerably in ADP. He's at a 143. What? How did that happen? We're talking like almost 100 spots different from year over year. Jorge Soler going into last year, coming off a 50 home run season. These are two outfielders that had massive 2019 seasons by their standards and now are all of a sudden discounts off of 2020. Now, I'm going to go first off this one because for me, when you go back and look at Victor Robles a couple years ago, once again, just 24 years old, at one point was a higher rated prospect than Soto, which was wrong. I just want to put that out there. There's nobody's Juan Soto. Juan Soto's a generational talent. But let's not forget that Victor Robles still has a lot of improvement he could make. Sophomore slumps are a real thing. All that is true. And yes, the contact can be a problem. But how many guys are going to draft in the 150 range that have the upside for 15 to 20 home runs and 20 to 30 stolen bases or somewhere in that range? The answer is not many. So I'm willing to take that shot. Now, I like Jorge Soler. I've always been a Jorge Soler guy. I was so happy that he finally got things right. But it does seem like an outlier, that enormous season. I think he will be bounce back from last year. But if I'm going to look at one thing, I'm going to look at the youth of Victor Robles. I'm going to look at the power and the speed, especially in those roto formats. And I'm going to lean with Robles. What say you about these two guys? Again, just a couple spots in between them for ADP. Both outfielders for the most part, depending on what league you're playing in. But Robles or Soler for you, Davis Maddock, which way would you be going?
Man, I'm sorry. I cannot do Victor Robles. Victor Robles, in his career, his entire Major League Baseball career, has 24 barrels. He cannot hit. That's just the way that it goes. His career on-base percentage is .320. His K rate for his career, 24%. His walk rate, 5%. 3 home runs, 4 steals. He doesn't have a premium batting order spot in Washington. You know, we think that he probably is going to bat. I would imagine that he's going to bat 8th for most of the year, and they might even bat him 9th some of the time as well if Carter Kaboom, starts to hit like he hit when he was in the minor leagues. And say whatever you want about Soler, he's got a ton of swing and miss in his game, but when he connects with the ball, he connects with the ball, right? Like Soler is kind of a true 3-outcome hitter. And I think that stuff is fine for fantasy baseball. So in 2019, the best season of his career, he generated only 156 total hits. 33 of those were doubles, 48 of those were home runs, right? So we're talking about over 50% of his hits being extra base hits. And where he's going in ADP, I don't think that it is accurately being accounted for the fact that the ball is going to be deadened this year. So guys like Jorge Soler, who have the massive home runs, who have that true raw power, I think those guys are universally being underappreciated. I think guys like Joey Gallo, guys like Luke Voit, I think all of them should be going, 10% more expensive in these drafts, because I think that the true raw power guys are going to have upside for 40 plus home runs in ways that, some of the bloop hitters are really just not going to have a chance to get there this year. So I'm going Solaire here. I totally get the logic as it pertains to Robles mm-hmm. with the steals, but Solaire, I think, just is a little bit more attractive to me.
No, it's good arguments on both sides. I will take some umbrage, which I'm not even sure what that means, but I'm going to take it because I think when you go back and look at the minor league track record of Victor Robles, especially the double A numbers, where to me that's always the best indicator because double A is where you get the most talent usually. Triple A can be a little bizarre, especially when you get PCL numbers and other things like that getting into the mix with PCL and triple A. But in double A, Robles was incredible. And for his career in the minor leagues, he had an 850 OPS. He's around a 300 hitter. So yes, in the major leagues, you're right. He has not been great, but he was also 22 and 23. So let's cut the kid some slack. He's still developing, for God's sakes. There's more upside. So for me, it's Victor Robles, and especially, again, the 5x5s. I'm definitely going that route. I don't dislike Solaire, but if I'm going to choose and the game is either or, I'm going to pick Robles and see where that leads me and hope that there's some plus there. Plus, I also like what they did in this offseason, adding Josh Bell and Kyle Schwarber. Looks like he's in very good shape. Best shape of his life, maybe, as most people are this time of year. But I think that helps lengthen this lineup a little bit more support for Trey Turner and for Juan Soto and for Victor Robles as well. All right, let's move on to a pair of shortstops here. Oh, the enigma that is Carlos Correa. You look at the ADP of him right now, it is at 126. Marcus Semien at 134. Now, Marcus Semien, if you're thinking 2019 was a complete outlier, you'd be wrong. Because if you go back to 2018, he was a house on fire in the second half of that season. So it was basically, it was a continuation of that red-hot second half of 2018 that flew through 2019, inflated his draft value quite a bit. Carlos Correa is still just 27 years old. I do not think that we have seen the best of Carlos Correa. And I understand the frustrations. He is been hurt quite a bit. He has disappointed sometimes when he has been healthy and on the field. I get all of that. I also get that he's playing for a contract, and I also get that he has an opportunity how right now to kind of stake his claim to the title of, hey, I am worthy of this number one overall pick you invested. I am going to show everybody I am still a potential franchise player and that you haven't seen the best of me either. I love Marcus Semien with Toronto. I think he's a great investment. I'd be happy to have both of these guys on my team. I would prefer both of them as my middle infielder if I could swing it, than as my starting shortstop, but I will take either of them anyway. If I'm going to take one of these guys, I'm going to take the upside of Correa. That's the way I would lean. How about you, Davis? Which way would you lean between these two guys?
I mean, the answer for Carlos Correa, it's got to be the cheating scandal, right? He saw his walk rate fall massively. He doesn't steal bases anymore. And I think I do think that of all the Astros who saw a decrease in performance, Correa seems like the one to have most been impacted by the Houston Astros cheating scandal. Now, the other thing is Semien is in a better lineup. He plays for a better offense, and he's going to give you power, and he's going to give you speed. And the projections absolutely love Marcus Semien. The bat X gives him 21 home runs, 10 steals, a .263 batting average, 90 runs scored, and 81 RBIs. I mean, if he gets to that projection, which I think, I mean, obviously I like Semien. I think he's got a pretty decent chance of getting there. He has a chance to be, earn second or third round fantasy value. I think that he could mirror the stats of, you know, someone like Corey Seager. No, I don't think he has the same raw power as Corey Seager, but he'll probably steal more bases than Corey Seager will. And Seager will probably go 100-100 in that Dodgers lineup. But the Blue Jays could also have the best offense in the American League if things break right. So I like Carlos Correa. I would take him if he was, you know, if he fell 10 spots after his ADP. A thing, though, for my draft strategy, I'm pretty much always taking Trevor Story, Lindor, Mondesi, mm-hmm. Seager, because I think the premium production that you get at shortstop there, I mean, I think it is kind of is unreplaceable. So my answer is Semien. I don't mind Correa, but I'm generally not taking either one of them.
Well, you know, it's funny because shortstop is actually a very deep position, and sometimes people look at that and say, oh, I can figure it out later, but then you're leaving things up to chance. And also it's harder to separate at shortstop and be better than everybody else. So what Davis is saying is correct. If you have a chance to take a Story or a Lindor or somebody of that higher echelon shortstop, it's smart to do because everybody is going to be better at shortstop. So yeah, you can look at it one way, but you should think about it the other sometimes. All right, we're going to hit a break. We come back before we close out this hour. A little look into tonight's NBA. get Davis's thoughts on a game as we continue to hit all the sports here on Fantasy Sports Today. So stick with us. We'll be right back right after this, right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Fantasy Sports Today. Let's take a look ahead to the NBA for a moment. Denver Nuggets at Milwaukee Bucks should be a fun contest. We're looking at it right now. Denver at Milwaukee. Milwaukee favored by 6.5. The over-under for this game is 236. So, Davis, if you don't mind, walk me through your thoughts on Nuggets and Bucks this evening in the NBA.
So I'm super attuned to all of these Denver Nuggets games for a couple reasons. The first is that I have a ticket for Nikola Jokic to win MVP. They are not going to be awarding Nikola Jokic the MVP if the Nuggets are like the sixth seed in the West. I think they have to comfortably get a top four seed. I think the Lakers would have to struggle a little bit. And also, I really like Michael Porter Jr. He is a fascinating case study in what happens when someone is basically as physically talented as Kevin Durant, but this just does not really understand the game of basketball. I mean, Michael Porter Jr. makes some of the most head-scratching plays I have ever seen in my years of watching professional basketball. But back to this specific game, Nikola Jokic is, I mean, he is on an unreal heater. He played 38 minutes last night, recorded 39 points, 9 assists, and 14 rebounds against the Bulls. I think that this matchup against the Bucks is a great spot for him in fantasy. And I also think it's a great spot for the Nuggets to get a signature win. Jrue Holiday is back for the Bucks, but I'm going to be taking the Nuggets and the points here and just continually betting on Nikola Jokic being, you know, basically the most unguardable center that the NBA has seen since Wilt Chamberlain. And I really do believe that. I think he's that good.
Wow, that is some high standard right there. Who's your MVP then? Is that just as simple as that right now? He's your guy?
Well, LeBron will win right now. If things stay kind of stagnant, LeBron will win. But I think Jokic can play well enough, and I think the Nuggets can win enough games to get him there. And I think that the Embiid train has slowed down the last couple weeks.
All right, hour one is in the books, hour two just around the corner. We're going to have some sports cards with Josh Cohen. We're going to have some fantasy and reality. We're going to have some more headlines and maybe, just maybe, Craig Mish on assignment from spring training. Oh, must see television. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this right here on Sports Grid, the home of the winning edge.